Welcome, it's SB Pod. Along with Stanford Steve, I'm Scott Van Pelt. Super Bowl, halftime show, Phoenix. That's what we got on the ledger. That sound about right? Travel? Let's start with travel. Let's start with our thank yous, huh?
Yeah.
Start with some shout outs.
Okay.
Last week you asked me, where was I staying? I just casually mentioned the Pendry in West Hollywood. Well, apparently the folks out there listen to the pod because we arrived on property and they were excited to know that we gave it a shout. That's before I saw it. Brand spanking new. You know I'm an art aficionado. Great art, great vibe, great scene. Staff's awesome. If you're in West Hollywood, check it out, the Pendry. We stayed there and enjoyed it immensely. Shout to the Wheels Up family. I'm not super over the top about stuff. That's a company I'm proud to partner with. And I just would say of them, they do things correctly.
Very correctly.
Correctly. Properly. Friday night dinner at Rayo's. Ugh. I mean, shout to the Rayo's family. Those speaking about doing it properly. Oh, my word. You, me, and Rosillo sit down. They're bringing out plates of food. And if you can get a table at Rayo's, which is, it's a chore, but it's worth it. The food's fantastic. I'm going to keep going, Steve. Shout to the 900 Club or whatever it is. Whatever it is in Manhattan Beach. What a fun vibe that was.
Very good. Very good.
Appreciate the folks looking after us there.
Got there a little later, so I think people got a head start on us.
We couldn't catch them. No. We could, although you tried. Thanks to Big Cat for coming and mingling with the lesser thans. We had that, and thanks to some Division I coaching people.
Yeah.
I'll just put it. There's people that live in the neighborhood that came down. It was for me 24 hours in Los Angeles, and it couldn't have been better.
No.
Great lodging at the Pendry. Great meal with Rayo's. I don't want to name drop, but me and Herbie had a little breakfast chat in the morning with a little guy named Joe Montana, who, by the way, is a freaking legend. And when he would try to get him going on stuff, and he's like, well, you know, we scored a couple of touchdowns. Like, no, hold on. You didn't just score a couple of touchdowns like I put on my shoes and a belt. Like, you did that. Incredibly gracious and humble for a guy who could just, you know, be a over-the-top obnoxious for his accomplishments. So anyway, that people right now listening are like, wait, you don't stay for the game? No. The veterans leave Saturday.
Spent a lot of time explaining that. Some folks at the airport were very confused after they noticed me, and then they saw me Saturday night and they're looking at their watch and they're like, wait, what's going on? I'm like, gotta go. Show's tomorrow and it's not here because the veterans leave town before the game.
You see folks in the airport, they're coming in, you're going out, and they say, you're going the wrong way. And I say, no, you are. But have fun here at the airport on Monday with a bunch of boozed up, depressed, even if they won, although in this case, nobody would be leaving, I guess, although maybe some Rams fans going home. Anyway, we got in, we got out, we saw some folks, crossed paths with some friends, reacquainted some friendships. Nothing's particularly close in Los Angeles.
No, I figured you were going to struggle with that because you're not
patient.
How do we say that? You don't adapt well. Adaptation, not a strength of yours.
No.
And it's really, really hard for you to let go and let the other people take the reins. And that's what happened Friday night.
Hold on.
It turned out to be very fun.
No doubt, but that's not the problem. The problem was not that. I was wherever Rosillo said we were going, we're going. He's local. We're fine. Yep. I thought where we were in Hollywood, or what, I think I was in, is that, was, were we in West Hollywood? Is that where the Rayo's is?
Yeah.
I know Manhattan Beach is next to it, but we were on the highway and for a while, like I thought we could, I don't know, where are we? We going to be in Scottsdale, Vegas, El Segundo? Like, where are we going? Big Cat sent me a text. He said, he's from the front seat, are they kidding? Are we being kidnapped? I mean, I didn't know. It just took a while. And then it's very late. I had an early morning call, and I didn't want to pull the ripcord. I wanted to stay. But yeah. I thought by the time the car gets me back home, it could be 4 in the morning. Mm. Nothing's particularly close out there. It's lots and lots of cool little neighborhoods and enclaves that are connected by a bunch of highways.
Three roads. Yeah.
There you go. But it was a blast, wasn't it?
Oh, so much fun. I've told the story a bunch when I was out there, Scott. But like when I'm in college, it's late 90s. And when we would go down south, you know, I had a friend that had a place like way farther south, like Capistrano Beach. And in the late 90s, Newport Beach was the spot. And it'd be like, hey, you know, maybe we should go up to Newport Beach, check out the vibe. And we drove up there and we're like, all right, do you have $10 for a beer? Because I don't have a dollar. Let's go back to the house and sit on the beach. So I had never even experienced Manhattan Beach in my time in California. And now, boy, is that spot. It's premium. It is as good as there is. And the people there are awesome. Restaurants. Got to have a couple meals with Russillo. And it's just tremendous out there. So thank you to everybody that got us in, got us out. It was absolutely tremendous.
It was that. Then we were home in time for the game. And the game, it felt kind of weird, right? It felt kind of disjointed to me in this sense. It felt like some big plays, yes. Odell Beckham Jr. getting injured clearly impacted the Rams. They were stubbornly trying to run the ball. I don't know why. Give the Bengals defense a bunch of credit because it looked like they might blank the Rams for this second half outside of a field goal until one drive. And it's a drive that changes the way people look at you, and it becomes you become a forever team and a forever player, maybe if you're Stafford or Kupp or Donald. But credit to the Rams defense as well, because the first play of the second half is a bomb to Higgins, and Rams fans will say, yeah, they missed it. They missed something there on Higgins. Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. And then the next play is a pick, and at that point, if the Rams defense doesn't hold them to a touchdown, to a field goal, I beg your pardon, and keep it a one-score game, who knows? Who knows where things go? But after they get that stop, no one does anything for basically until the last drive the Rams had. Mm-hmm. And so there was, it was weird. The Rams had great field position, couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
Again, I'm like, what's McVay doing? And then push comes to shove, and I don't know if it was a conscious effort where staff's just like, it, I'm throwing it to 10. But I mean, they went for it on third and fourth and goal rather from their own 30-yard line, which was gutsy. And you run a jet sweep, you'd know better than I would having played tight end, but that's the kind of play that can get blown up in a hurry. Mm-hmm. But they gave it to their best player, and then he's the guy that ends up scoring in the end. I don't know. A lot of it felt weird. Felt like it was just jumpy or something.
Yeah. Well, a couple things watching it back today. And I made a point not to go on social media the whole game. I didn't care what anyone was saying. I wanted to watch it, and I knew I was going to watch it back today. When you say, I don't know why he's running the ball because it's not working, watching it back, he has to try and keep the defense out of a mindset where they could pass rush every play.
Okay.
So, and I think both coaches got caught in that game plan because look at the talent and look at the strength of both defenses, right? Pass rushers. They got them across the board. Cincinnati, you got Hubbard, you got Hendrickson, and Reader's a good player. And on the other side, you know, you got 99, you got 40, you got Gaines, you got Floyd. And you couldn't give in to try and chuck the ball every play that early. It's a one-score game. And anywhere you can just try and catch them off balance or keep them with your guys and knowing that they're going to run block and being forward, I think that was good. They were trying to help them. And the other thing that was really humbling watching it back is we knew Higbee was out, and even Uzama wasn't 100%. The tight ends got rolled in the run game. There were runs there, and the way the Rams run, like wide zone, the tight ends on the backside, they just couldn't get there. I mean, Von Miller and Floyd especially were just sensational. On the other side, I thought Sam Hubbard, even though he didn't have a big stat line, he was all over the place. And that's what happens. The guys on the backside make those zones happen. And that's why it looked weird, because it was stubborn and they didn't want to give it up, knowing it was still a one possession game. So they were going to try and keep it one possession.
All of what you say makes sense. The issue becomes you're trying to keep them honest. Mm-hmm. And we know that they loved so much is based predicated on play action and whatever else. But when you can't get first downs, mm-hmm. then you're wasting downs and you only get three shots at it. You're wasting one of them. So now you're needing to get 10 yards or 9 or 8 on the two downs that you've got. And if you're incomplete on 3rd and 6 or whatever it is, well, now you're punting it back. And it was sort of, I mean, a solid chunk.
That was the key to jump you. They weren't giving up first downs either. That's, you know what I'm saying, is they're only going 3 and out, but they're also, their defense is going 3 and out too. So that's where the stubbornness comes in, and that's where the belief and trust comes in your defense, and you saw that in the fourth quarter.
Right. So in the end of this kind of back and forth, stop, start, no one can get a first down game, it's, what, 6 minutes on the clock, and you got to score a touchdown because you missed an extra point earlier in the game, field goal won't do. And Stafford and Kupp go the length of the field. I mean, I don't know that we're not good right now in the moment, Steve, of just taking what we just saw and just taking it for that. So much conversation I felt like on all the different shows today was Stafford being a Hall of Famer, which is either he absolutely is or he's absolutely not. And I just don't understand why we can't say, hey, a dude who finally got a chance to play with a good team just won the Super Bowl, and that's that.
Yeah. My take, Scott, is being a guy that lost in the biggest game of his career, I always think about the loser of the game.
Uh-huh.
And I know we've always had, deals on the show or we're a post-game show, and you say, hey, let's focus on the winner of the game. But to me, this deal, run, season for the Bengals is an all-timer. And when you think about it, and you think, like, there was a point right there in the third quarter where I'm just sitting there, I'm like, I don't know if the Rams have enough to overcome this deficit, even though it's only one score, because they lost their guy Beckham, who was the ultimate in creating separation, and that was their matchup that they were going to go to. And I really thought the Bengals were going to win, and then it flips, and now they lose. And I just think about, I mean, the ultimate comparison for never getting back is obviously Dan Marino. But, man, like, when you look at the Bengals and you look at the opportunity they had and just think about the AFC, it's tough, really, really tough for me to try and put myself in Bengals fans and players and coaches' heads today, knowing how close it was, because when they're going to go back and watch it, they didn't play well enough to win, but they still could have won because at some points their defense kept them in the game. And it's a really, really tough one to swallow.
I hear you, and I understand exactly what you're saying, because for the balance of the second half, which was so strange, it's the first play to Higgins, bang, you're ahead, then you get a pick, now you get a field goal, and you're up a touchdown, and then you're up 4, and your defense continues to keep you right there. Yeah. And now you're looking at the clock thinking, if we could just get a couple of first downs, but they couldn't, because that Rams front, in the end, after the touchdown, Donald's just, he was as advertised. He was the best player on the field. And that led to a lot of MVP conversation. They always tend to go offensive player. And Kupp, who closes out an historic season where he was the offensive player of the year, the NFL, the Super Bowl MVP, and won a receiving triple crown. This was an amazing statistic to me, Steve. The only other receiver in the history of the game to have all of those accolades in a career is Jerry Rice. And Cooper Kupp did all of them in one season. And so I think offense almost always wins the day when it comes to those awards.
Had they
said 99 gets it, I would have thought entirely appropriate. If I had a vote, I would have voted Donald.
Watching the game back, it was Donald. Seeing what he did, and that's the problem, is the ruckus that he causes, there's no stat line for it. But in the end, you saw it. And to the people that say not a great game, anticlimactic, I call you have the best player in the game hurrying the biggest story in the game this year in Burrow, and yep. It's mano a mano on the last play for them to try and advance it. And it was as good as it gets when you consider what was at stake in the moment.
Yeah, and you make the great point about the Bengals, and this isn't meant to be a downer. It's just the reality. I mean, you have Allen, who's going to get there. You have Mahomes, who's going to make it hard for Allen to get there. You have Herbert, who's going to make it hard for Allen and Mahomes to get there. And you have whoever else might evolve and might step forward over time. And Lewis Riddick told us on SportsCenter, it makes sense. You got to build from the out, from the inside out and yep. from front to back. And their offense is built the reverse. They need to get better up front, clearly. I mean, 16 sacks in two games, 9 against Tennessee, 7 in this one. And Burrow's running for his life. And still, I saw an angle with Pierine where you realize that desperation fling yep. on fourth down had as much of a chance as any human could have given from the quarterback position with Donald draped around him. It just, I mean, didn't happen. And then anticlimactic, I disagree with. I just think, again, for a game where no one could get a first down for such a solid chunk of the third and fourth quarters, it comes down to one 15 play drive and then one stop and it's over. That just, it felt like it was abrupt. Mm-hmm. It the ending was so abrupt. And look, in the end of it all, I have no appetite for the Stafford Hall of Fame conversation. And the thing about knowing Matt is if you talk to him, he'd give you that McConaughey laugh and smile and go, man, I'll just keep playing. We'll figure it out when it's done. Because I promise you, he doesn't care.
No.
About your conversation about whether he's absolutely in or absolutely not. He doesn't care. Because he got out of a city he gave everything he could to in Detroit, played hurt, earned the respect and admiration of everyone in the league, which was why he was so coveted. And I'm psyched for him that he had an opportunity to show what he could be and got the chip. And whether he is a gold jacket guy in the end or not, he's a Lombardi guy now and showed you the difference he could make. And I feel good for Odell Beckham Jr. too. The end in Cleveland felt icky to me. I mean, getting mm-hmm. your pop involved on Instagram and calling out Baker. I mean, none of that feels great. And he said as much, like he regrets how it ended, but it was a means to an end. Mm-hmm. And before he goes down, you're seeing everything that people thought he could be in New York. And frankly, a whole hell of a lot more because he was on the Super Bowl stage. Yep. And he had that look on both the touchdown catch and then on that big cross across the middle, like a guy that might've been the MVP when it was done. And so it's crushing for him to see an injury, but as disappointing as I'm with you on as it relates to the Bengals, their fan base, Burrow, and nothing's guaranteed for the path back, there's plenty of stories on that LA side that I think are to be celebrated.
No doubt. Agree on all fronts.
Where are we on halftime? I feel like that's...
I still haven't seen a second of it.
Oh, you didn't watch?
Nope. I went downstairs
to the buffet.
Grabbed a bite, talked to some people. Was checking out some second half lines and stuff, and I just said, you know, it's something that I'll watch. Another day when we don't have football or something. So
I watched it. I enjoyed it. I thought the scene that the aesthetic of what they created with the grid of LA, because LA has such a distinctive footprint from the mm-hmm. air. And they did an amazing job with that. And I enjoyed it. And I tweeted out a picture of Prince, because Prince in Miami in the rain.
That's like your favorite thing ever.
You're right. You can. And I every year I'm reminded of how great I thought it was. There's an amazing story that The Ringer did that takes you through all of how it came off. I find it fascinating because I think he's an enigmatic person. He was just so out there and had this mystical quality about who he was. And also, I happen to really enjoy the guy's music. Anyway, I just tweeted out the Prince picture, and it turns into this people yelling at me. Well, not, you know how good Twitter goes.
Of course.
It's just the thing I got the biggest kick out of was like, okay, boomer. And like, tell me you're old without telling me you're old. And it's like, wait a second. Do you know that Dre is 56? Do you know that Snoop's 50? You know, Mary J's 51. You know, Eminem's 49. You know, 50's like 46. The only young performer on the stage was Kendrick. And you said this is like generational. This music's my generation a hell of a lot more than it's yours if you're young. Unless, like, what are you, a 20-something year old? Like, Doggy Style came out in 93. What the f*** are you talking about? If you listen to this music, you're in diapers. So I'm not the old guy. They're the same age as me. Well, how does this become a generational thing? And by the way, we're talking about a halftime show. If you thought it was better, I don't care. I enjoyed it too. I liked it a lot. I just always think that if you got to rank it. Of course, because that's what we're in the business of doing. And I say, give me Prince playing Purple Rain in the rain with the Florida A&M band, and that's my winner. But if you want to tell me you like the other better, that's fine. I don't care. Also, it's not your generation's music anymore than it's mine. Like, we listened to all the hits that they were playing when we were younger people. Mm. I just find it really interesting how that became sort of like, well, this is our generation. How old are you? Some guy told me, I'm 35. Oh, how old were you when The Chronic came out? How old are you when Real Love came out? Like, what are we talking about? This just shows that people, and I'm part of people, will argue over anything. And I'm not here to argue. I just wanted to tweet out Prince's picture. Y'all ready to sing tonight? Man, that was awesome. That's all we got, I guess.
Yeah.
On this, the other Super Bowl this weekend was in Phoenix. How good was that scene?
I made it a point Saturday. Had a little downtime, a couple hours, and I just had to get somewhere, and I just wanted to watch the golf, and it was as good. You know, it's Super Saturday. That's what they coined it at the Waste Management. Yeah,
they've never like officially branded that, but they should, because Saturday is the day that everybody out there. Shout to the Thunderbirds. That's a local charitable organization that raises tons of money for the community and organizes the whole thing. They're all about Saturday. Like, that's their big day. And they have well over 200,000 people on the golf course.
Think about
what I'm saying.
I want to know how many people were at the Bird's Nest after. Because that looked insane.
All of them. Which means I saw Sam Ryder made the hole in one. And he said something like, drinks on me. Buddy, if you had the tab at the Bird's Nest on Saturday night, that's an eight-figure tab. You can't win enough money playing this week or all year to cover that bar tab. It was one of those things that felt like a thing, not just for in the golf space, right? It felt like a sports thing that everyone was kind of aware of. And then when the hole in one gets made, and then another hole in one gets made on Sunday, and then the man who's going to be our guest and Harry Higgs, a.k.a. the Big Rig, and his playing partner, Joel Damon, when they decided they'd go shirts off, you know, for pars, you know, just things were amped up to a next level.
Good point.
Before we move on, that get your attention? Cool. There's two more things I want to mention. Check out First Draft with Mel Kiper Jr., Todd McShay, and Field Yates every Monday and Thursday. Guys, keeping tabs on the NFL draft. You can listen to First Draft wherever you get your podcasts or watch the show on YouTube. And watch NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app, or listen to the show as a podcast. Super Bowl is one thing, Steve.
Yep.
Phoenix is another. The Waste Management Phoenix Open.
People's open.
It's, bro, I've been there. You've been there. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like it. This year was different. And I checked sources. top 10 player in the world, Justin Thomas, who had a nice little Sunday finish, got to the top 10. I said, am I nuts or was this the like something different? He said, 10,000% more this year than ever before, biggest party ever. And ladies and gentlemen, this is a historic moment on the pod. Harry Higgs, a.k.a. the Big Rig, makes his debut. Welcome, sir.
Thank you guys very much. I think it's been long overdue, and I'm certainly happy to be here.
We're honored. Let's just give people the backstory. Steve, it goes back to the Safeway, doesn't it? We were watching the Safeway Open, a fall event a couple of years ago, and there's a guy out there, shirt's kind of unbuttoned, and he's going, he's getting after stuff. He's not afraid. And Steve says, like the cut of that guy's jib right there. And you dubbed him the Big Rig, didn't you?
I did. I know there's been some talk about the conversation and the nickname, but I'm firm on the Big Rig.
Look, Big Beautiful's out there, and we're not making anybody choose. We just call you the Big Rig. And last year when I talked to you at Kiowa, I wanted to make sure, for all I knew, you wanted to punch me in the face, be like, hey, you bald enough. But thankfully, we were on board, and which was a blast. We had a fun conversation down there, didn't we?
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it quite often. Which one would you rather be called? Yeah. Big, beautiful, Big Rig, all this stuff. And the answer is always the same. It's a very simple answer. I have been called much worse. So either one of these things is way good with me. I quite enjoy it. It's obviously, it's turned into and is continuing to just be more and more of a thing. And I would say when I'm out there playing golf and everybody's screaming and yelling, it's 50-50. It's right down the middle, Big Beautiful or Big Rig. So I don't know. I don't know if we make a push for one or the other.
No. Don't make
I'm
people
happy with either one.
I'm not here to make anybody choose. I just want people to understand. But I got to say this. When you're playing last year at Kiowa at the PGA Championship, there are some people that will remember that week as Phil Mickelson, the oldest to win a major, and that's fine.
Sure.
Others will remember the Big Rig making a bomb on 18, and I'm on the mic, and I get to scream, go ahead, Big Rig! And I'm like, I'm broadcasting a major, and that's what I'm yelling. And you played your ass off and finished tied for fourth, which... we're not doing this to heckle you. We're doing it because we love the approach that you just are here to play good golf and have a good time and enjoy life. But how does that week maybe kind of change, I don't know, what you think about what you can be?
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, I had struggled leading into that week. I think I maybe missed two or three cuts in a row. Whatever it was, it wasn't great golf. And honestly, it wasn't that great all throughout the week, but I just kind of got into, as we call it, kind of mother mode, and was just like, you know what, the golf course is hard. There's places you can't hit it. I'm just not going to hit it there, and I'm going to figure it out. And I pretty much did that for 72 holes. I made one mistake that week. It was my second hole of the entire week. I played a shot I shouldn't have and made bogey, and I was like, okay, well, and then, you know, when you decide to get into that mode, it almost takes one try to, you know, to take you out of it. I was like, no, we're sticking to what I was going to do, and I had a great week. You know, my brother's also my caddy, and the part I took away from it is like, hey, we're good enough to win a major, obviously. And I thought the coolest part of my entire year last year, so including the PGA, was I remember driving in the fairway on 16, a par 5, we had a bit of a wait for the green to clear. And I, like, the coolest, proudest moment so far, probably so far in my golf career until I win one of these things, was I got to turn to my brother as we were waiting for the green to clear. And I said, Al, we're going to be right in between 5 and 6 iron, you know, second shot into this par 5. We need to choose the club that gives us the best chance at making 3 because we have a chance to win this golf tournament. And that's just like, you know, little things like that. Yeah, like that will stick with me forever. I chose 6 iron, hit a decent shot that ended up just a little left. It didn't get it up and down for birdie, and obviously didn't wind up winning the major. But just that little moment right there will stick with me forever. And then also that, you know, the biggest takeaway is that I'm good enough to win major championships. You know, I've made a steady progression in my now pretty long professional career. and you believe in yourself more and more after good results. This is a results-based business, obviously, and right. that's something I can always hang my hat on. And more so in the light that, like, hey, man, I didn't even really have, like, all my bullets, and I was still able to have a chance to win a golf tournament. I got to say out loud, like, hey, man, we need to make a decision here as if we were going to win this tournament.
That's awesome.
So that's cool. And, golf is fickle, and it's back and forth, and I've struggled at times since, and I've had good weeks since. So, you know, but I'll always harp back on that. Like, hey, when my gun isn't fully loaded, I'm still able to win the biggest of biggest tournaments.
Which is awesome, and that's a hell of a story, and it was a great week. And I just want to know, Harry, who made the call to take your shirt off on the 16th hole yesterday in Phoenix?
God. Well, yeah. There's more of a story to this than you would think. It wasn't necessarily just a spur of the moment kind of thing. I got paired on Saturday with Keith Mitchell, who's a good friend.
A legend as well.
A legend, yeah. Cashmere Keith.
That's him.
And so you get the text message the night before about who you're with. Our names are right next to each other on the leaderboard. So I figured, you know, there's a good chance. Boom, text message comes in. I'm with Keith. Okay, great. He immediately sends me a text. What are we going to do on 16? And he said, what are we going to do? Not right. What are you going to do? What are we going to do? And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, let's just go make a hole in one and set the place on fire, something like that. So, and that was that. You know, we weren't staying together. We stayed together many weeks. He's a good friend, and we weren't staying together. Nothing. I get there in the morning. He and I both have the same trainer. So I get in and get warmed up first, and Keith comes in after, and I leave and go put my shoes on and go out to hit some putts. And, you know, 20, 30 minutes later, Keith comes out and he immediately walks right to me and is like, hey man, there were a bunch of guys, you know, in the little training room that we use. You know, I floated the idea that you take your shirt off and we'll get a bunch of money together, you know, to either pay your fine or pay you to do it. It pots up to $8,000. And I'm just like, what the hell happened? I mean, how are we talking about my shirt coming off, man? I thought we were just going to like have a nice friendly day. And now all of a sudden, like, hey, you got to take a shirt off in front of, you know, 50,000 people. And then, you know, Saturday waste management, it's in front of 10 million plus eyeballs. I mean, it's the craziest day of our year. It's the craziest day of golf. I'm like, no, dude, I'm not doing that, man. I do not. And I'm thinking, like, I take my shirt off on 16, and then I go out and win this year's Masters. I'm still going to get yelled at for being the guy that took his damn shirt off. Dude, I do not want to do that. And I wound up having not a great Saturday, and it was like, no, I'm way out. And he was still harping on me, like, I'll double it. We'll make it $16,000. Like, dude, that's not enough. I'm going to be the one that has to hear all these people yelling this shit at me. I do not want to do it. So I get through 16, and I don't remember where. I think I had a putt for birdie and missed and finished the round. No shirt came off. And I fall down to close to last place heading into Sunday. And it's like, you know, that's a tough spot to be because you can certainly pack it in, especially that week. And it's just a long week. It's exhausting. It takes a lot of effort and energy. It's like a major. So I'm kind of, you know, you're always floating on this Sunday's last place. Like, am I going to really try to focus and get something out of this, you know, that I can take into next week? Or am I just going to basically have like a rest day, go out there and swing and just keep scoring and sign it and leave? Well, the text message comes through and now I'm paired with Joel, and I'm just paired with Joel. We were playing a twosome Saturday. I had Keith and God, I can't remember who else, but we had three. Sorry to whomever, if you're listening. I forgot who you were.
No big deal.
But the text comes through on Sunday. I'm just paired with Joel. We are second to last off 10, so we're going to get to 16 at like 12:30. And Sunday after that Saturday is shockingly tame. Well, this year it wasn't. Nothing about the week from Tuesday on was tame. And Joel goes the opposite route. He doesn't text me and ask me, what are we going to do? He just tweets it, you know. And he was a little surgical in his tweet. He just said, if this gets enough retweets, Harry will take his shirt off. Well, we never said how many retweets it was going to be. It could have been a million. I wasn't going to do it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be the guy that does that. No, 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 no. Well, we tee off on 10. I hit it in the fairway, and it's already starting. Somebody's yelling, did you get enough retweets? Get up to the green. Are you going to pop the top? Get to 11 tee. Same. I mean, it's literally every time I stop at my ball, somebody is yelling, are you going to take your shirt off? Are you going to take your shirt off? Are you going to, did we get enough retweets? Are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? And I kept telling everybody no. And then I told them, a couple folks, like, hey, man, these cheap millionaires wouldn't raise enough money for me to do it. 16 grand is just not going to move the needle for me. I'm sorry. 5 years ago, I would have ran around naked for 16 grand, but that's just not enough now. And that's not a little bit of money, but it's just not enough.
No.
Well, we keep going and we keep going, and I'm having I think I made one birdie before we get to 16, and then, you know, I hit a nice shot with an 8-iron on 16, and it goes so damn far in that hole, and it bounced over the green, and I get booed, and Joel hit a good one, and they're at about 15 feet. He gets a cheer, and then it just started. Everybody in there, take it off, take it off. We want skin. Show me the belly. Take it off. Take it off. Take it off. And I'm flipping Joel off at this point, like, because they all know that he's the impetus of it. And if Keith was right there, I'd flip him off too, because he had a hand in it. And I get back over behind the green, and I didn't have a great line. I didn't want to duff a chip in front of these people, so I grab my putter and hit it too hard, and it goes to 10 feet. I get booed again, and then they kind of quiet down as Joel hits it. Joel left a 15-footer short right in the middle of the hole, and I don't even know if I flipped him off again there, but I was booing him. I was, you know, everybody boo him louder. You can't leave that putt short. And I still had no thought, desire, anything about taking my shirt off. None. And I put my ball down, and I get behind it to read it, and then I'm walking into it. And it's just getting louder and louder. And I'm hitting my putt at like 10 feet for par. I'm hitting my putt. And they're chanting as loud as they can, take it off, take it off, take it off. And I'm just over it. And it kind of like in the back of my mind, it's like, well, I guess if I make this, I might as well just do it. And sure enough, I hit it. And I kind of looked up and I was like, well, that's in. And everything was moving in slow motion. It had like 2 feet to go. I knew it was in. So, I mean, it's literally a second. I had a second to decide. Ball drops in the hole, and I lift my shirt up, and then pandemonium.
Mayhem.
I mean,
mayhem.
Mayhem. Immediately, beers are flying. I mean, they're cheering. They're throwing beers for pars. We both made par.
Yeah.
Like, neither one of us really played the hole that well, and they're throwing beers. And then to Joel's credit, he is one of my best friends in the world, and he is a great man. I go up and get my ball out of the hole, and as I'm walking, you know, turn around and see him, he's already got his shirt off, lassoing it around his head, like, get it going even more.
So Petey Pablo.
They get louder.
He went Petey Pablo.
Oh, yeah, baby. They get louder, and more beers start flying down. And then just pandemonium ensues, you know? I mean, it was bat crazy. And we made par. Like, we didn't do anything well on the hole. We just showed skin, and they loved him. And, you know, since then, I certainly maybe agree with any potential punishment that's coming, because it, like, that's just a little too much, but it was obviously well received. I mean, I'm talking to you guys, there's everybody's posting and talking about it, and it, you know, as over the top as it may have been, it was a good thing for our exposure, both Joel and I and the tour in general, that, like, yeah, I mean, even the guys that you think are just so businesslike and so locked in all the time, they're actually normal people, and they have fun doing this. They may not show it, and they may not show it on the PGA Tour, but, like, we have fun doing this, and yeah, sure, we took it a little too far and showed some skin, but, like, we're all normal dudes. We're just really good at what we do, and we work really hard at what we do. But it's okay to be normal and have fun and be reminded that, like, yeah, this game is actually supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be where, you know, no one can get into it. No one can play. Like, yeah, if you look like me, you can play high level golf. And that, you know, that takes 20 plus years of work. So, you know, if you're a little, you know, if you're in your 30s or 40s, maybe you set your expectations a little lower, but it was a lot of fun. It was probably just a little over the top. You know, getting egged on, peer pressure. It's amazing. I kept saying, it's amazing what you'll do when people start chanting your name. It is truly incredible. I probably need to rein it in just a little bit now for the rest of this year and probably the rest of my career. I mean, I think it's safe to say that'll be the last time anybody sees any of my chest hair on national television. But, you know, you never know. The 16th hole at Scottsdale is bat crazy.
I will say this. Did you technically – you didn't take your shirt off, though.
No.
You didn't take it off.
Thank you for riding with me. Yes. No, I flashed everybody. Joel straight up took his shirt off.
Exactly. He's the one that took it off. You didn't take it off.
Joel Damon's shirt was off entirely, and he Petey Pablo. He waved it over his head like a helicopter. I couldn't believe it. And, Harry, I feel bad because – and I'm sure you weren't paying attention to the volume of the tweets, but I did the worst thing you can do, which is what we all do to our buddies when we want to nudge him. I said, you won't do it.
Of course I did it. Yeah.
And then you did it. And I'm like, oh God. And I'm not saying you did it. I know it was the people there, but man, the people there. And again, I've been there. And if you haven't seen it, and Steve, you've seen it. And when we were out there for the Super Bowl and next year's Super Bowl event are the same week, which is, I can't even imagine. But when it was over, Steve was just like, bro, is this what it's like? I said, no, here, this is what it's like here.
Just there.
But Rig. And
just there on that, on
Saturday.
Those three holes. Three holes.
Right.
And you get out to number one when you make the turn. And the only people there that are watching is my mom and my girlfriend. Like, it was three holes ago. I was trying to hit a shot while shaking in front of people, screaming and yelling my name, right? Like, there is a stark difference between the front nine and the back nine on that golf course.
Was Saturday this year, did it sound and feel as different as TV made it appear it was?
100%. That was I think COVID had a lot to do with it. That was my third year. So first year I played was pre-COVID, and it was a show. I mean, I'd never seen it. I made the cut, was playing good, never seen anything like it. Like, Saturday, the waste management is absolute madness. And then last year, they had a lot of the build out and they had a lot of people there, but it was just kind of, it didn't have the same fever. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of the stuff everywhere is relaxed and people just decided, I think Augusta will be similar this year. Like, you know, this is the first one back after COVID. I mean, let's just go. I mean, like everybody in America was there on that Saturday. It was truly, truly incredible.
Just a thought. Don't take your shirt off on 16 at Augusta.
No, I'll say this. I've made plenty of bad decisions in my day. I will not do that there. I might even button up a button there. I don't know.
Let's not get crazy.
Steve, let's not get crazy now.
That might be taking it a touch too far, but.
Now, here's the thing, though. It, as fun as it is, and it was a blast to watch, and I've spent my career covering the game, and I appreciate traditions. I appreciate sort of the game and what comes with it. And I think you're also allowed to have an absolute blast and do it the way Phoenix does it. Turn the knob to 11 and go nuts for sure. But I do want to know this. When Ryder makes the one and it's just mayhem and there's garbage everywhere. Okay. When Ortiz makes the one, I get it. JT holes out from behind the green, garbage. You and Damon with your shirts off, garbage. And fear is not the right word, but at some point you can't just do that every third group, right?
Yeah. And that's, I'm sure that there will be discussions being had in the next year about basically how to avoid that. And you know, they might be too far gone where it's unavoidable. So then you got to start banning Lord knows what. I mean, let's hope they don't ban beer on that hole.
Well, that won't happen.
But, you know, you're going to have to start making some different decisions about how to tame the hole or try to tame the hole. And look, yes, I was not expecting, I didn't do it for a damn beer shower for sure. I didn't really want to do it. I just did it as a, I guess, very spur of the moment thing and just lost control for 3 seconds of my life that I'll never, ever live down now. And look, yes, any publicity is good publicity, but it's going to get tiring hearing this at times. I'm all for it for once. I mean, I couldn't imagine. I think the whole place would have burned down if I was the one that made a hole in one. No offense to Carlos and Sam, but right. It damn near burned down when they did too.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. The chipping in and if two guys are running around shirtless, maybe just leave those two guys alone and don't throw beers. But it can get a little obviously unsafe. You know, people aren't paying attention to where they're throwing them. I mean, you know, they're enthralled in the moment, much like I was, and they're just chucking their beers. I mean, a lot of them seem like they were pretty damn full too.
Yeah.
I might have to talk about, you know, finishing your beers up there. We'll see. Well, I would imagine over the next year there will be discussions and something might be tweaked a little bit. I know of nothing, not at least yet, but I mean, it was, again, I like, and you said you've experienced it, and to any listener that has been and has experienced or hasn't been and seen it on TV and they have an idea about what it is, it's one of those things that if you hadn't been and you go, it's even more. You guys have been, you've seen it, you kind of understand it, but then put yourself in my shoes and be the one that is in there hitting golf shots. I mean, it is unlike anything. Maybe I don't even know that like first tee of Ryder Cup has
more nervous, this like, much. Like more nervous over that ball than any other thing in your professional life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've had putts to win tournaments, you know, all this, way more nervous. And it is unreal. And then just the whole thing, man, I remember my first year thinking, and I started on 10 on Thursday, so you're going to get there quick. And my first thought on 10 was, all right, I'm going to try to make as many birdies in these six holes as I can just in case I screw up 16. You know, we still have a good round. And, of course, I parred 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. I dropped like a 40-footer on 15, and I had like a brief exhale. And I'm walking through the tunnel. I'm just like, hey, man, lock in here, man. This is it's just a golf shot. We're going to pick the right club. We're going to pick a good target. We're going to take a deep breath, and we're going to make a swing. And we go through all this stuff. And then it happens. It hits you so late, right over the ball. You start shaking, and the only thought in your head is like, God, please hit the green. Please hit the green. Please hit the green. Please hit the green. And you just hit it. I mean, and I haven't even really tried. Like, I just now I know that if it's a 9-iron, I just take a wedge. And I'm just like, I'm just going to hit it hard, and I'm going to hit it right at the flag because that's the only thing that you can do on this hole. Just swing as hard as you can and aim right at the flag, even though you probably shouldn't ever aim at any of the pins on that hole. But screw it, I'm going to do it anyway. It is. And then you try to putt, and you're shaking. And, I mean, imagine trying to putt when they're screaming at you to take your damn shirt off.
You didn't have your putter in your hand much after that first, but when Minshew was with you, that putter was in the air.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, that was unreal. They had texted me the day before about wanting to meet him after the round. I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, if he's here and wants to meet me, sure. I mean, you know, he quarterbacked us. You know, I'm an Eagles fan. He quarterbacked us to a win this year, sure. And then I'm finish up on 15. I made birdie, and I'm walking. I'm like, oh, that guy looks familiar. And then it's, hey, man, I'm Gardner. I'm going to follow you for the next couple holes. I'm like, okay, cool. And then next thing you know, there's cameras everywhere, and I'm just like shaking my head. It's like only in Phoenix, man, only in Phoenix. And then I grabbed my pitching wedge and I hit it as hard as I could. And then it's funny, my first year there, I hit it to the same spot. I had the same putt, and credit to my brother. We walk up there and we're just enjoying it, right? You hit the green, you can enjoy it. Now just don't leave it short, and then it's still enjoyable, but hit the green. We're like, okay, good. Exhale. All right, here we go. You know, I hand him my ball. He cleans it, and he looks at me and goes, and he's kind of got this smile on his face. He's like, man, there's no way you're missing this putt. And I looked at him, and I go, yeah, I'm definitely going to make this, Al. And then that was that. You know, I was first to go, so I probably shouldn't have done the annex that I did as the first off to go. But again, there's no rules on that hole. You just, if you do something crazy, you go crazy. You lose control. And I think I had 22 feet. And I remember the last 5 or 6 feet of it looking at it like, yeah, that's in. And I just threw my putter in there. I didn't even see the ball go in the hole. And it was, again, something similar to when I was, you know, lifting my shirt up. I'm looking at the last 3 feet of this putt. I throw my putter in the air, and I just look up at the crowd, and I'm thinking, like, oh, shit, please go in. Please go in. It all happened. Like, please go in. Please go in. And then they go nuts, and then that's that, man. It's, I can't describe how crazy the hole is. It's just, it's unreal.
How many nights do we make curfew in Phoenix?
Oh, every night, man. I am.
Okay. All right.
I'm a wimp. I had my mom there. My brother stayed with me, a friend of my mom's, my brother's girlfriend. Man, I was home in bed before 9 every night, but last night, and that was just, you know, the end of the week. It's too draining. And then, like, yeah, I mean, I'm there to work, you know. It's not, if I was there as one of the people in the stands on 16, I don't know that I would have ever made curfew, but I'm not. I'm the one that they're screaming and yelling at. So I like to be good at my job, obviously.
Good man.
So that requires a lot of water and a lot of sleep.
We're going to let you get out of here because I know you got stuff to do. But there, Steve, there's some breaking news here. I've received a text from Kashmir Keith.
Oh, yeah. Shocker. Shocker. He's going to probably say it's not his fault. He owes me $8,000.
No. No, here's how this reads. He missed my bachelor party 3 ways. Private flight from Augusta, wrong passport in Dallas, missed flight in Dallas, 3 consecutive days, no dice. The whole group said he would be removed from his exile if he did it. So I guess you're good. Oh,
shit, I completely forgot about that, but I guess I'm good again.
Yeah,
that
sounds like you're good to me.
You're not getting $8,000, Big Rig, but you're out of exile from missing it. Now, this leads to another question of how'd you miss your boys' bachelor party 3 different days, 3 different ways? But I feel like you've already been more than gracious with your time.
So, oh, I'm happy to tell it because we've had some issues with alarm clocks, and I sleep really well. Really well. The alarms don't really wake me up. If I got to get up for something early, I got to throw my phone in the corner of the room so I can hear it and have to get out of bed.
All right. Apparently you had 3 shots at this, Rig. 3 shots.
Well, okay. So we'll get into it. We'll get into it briefly. So I turned 30 the weekend before. And for my 30th birthday, I took my brother and my dad to Augusta. And a member was kind enough to host us. And we played a couple days after my 30th birthday. Now, this was on Tuesday we played. We were going to fly out Wednesday, and I was a quick turn and burn. Wake up Thursday morning, so fly home Wednesday, you know, basically just pack a swimsuit and flip-flops. We were going down to the Bahamas for Keith's bachelor party. I'm all excited, gung-ho. Let's go, baby. And we were going down to Marsh Harbor. So the way to get there from Dallas is DFW to Miami early, like 5:30 in the morning. And if you miss that flight, there's one flight to Marsh Harbor. I mean, that's it. So if you miss the flight, you're done. You cannot get there that day. So I wake up, and I needed a new passport to get to Japan to play the Zozo this year. Well, and the tour just did it for me because they treat us very well. And I didn't remember them giving back my old passport that had expired. So I wake up at 3:30 in the morning and I drove myself to the airport. I mean, it's 3:30 in the morning, but I had no cocktails before that night.
Harry.
And woke up. You got me still?
I'm just saying, Harry. No cocktails.
No.
No Tito's.
Zero. I missed 2 flights. No cocktails.
All right.
Oof. So I wake up at 3:30, grab my passport, grab my little bag I pack, drive to the airport, plenty of time. We're cruising. I cannot wait. I got a lay flat seat to Miami. I'm going to get on the plane. I'm going to sleep the whole way there. I'm going to wake up, and then I'm going to probably have some cocktails on the, you know, getting ready for the flight down to Marsh Harbor.
Sure.
Well, I wait in line, and I mosey on up. Here, take my golf clubs. I'm going to carry on my luggage. I'm on the 5:30 flight to Miami. here's my passport. And she looks at me and goes, sir, I mean, this passport's expired. I can't let you fly. And I look at her and I look at the passport and I go, yeah, you sure can. Okay, great. So turn around and now I'm head spinning and it's 4 in the morning. I mean, it's 4:15 in the morning. Trying to find ways to get there. Can't get there. Can't get there. The biggest mistake that I made was I should have just gotten on a flight to Miami later that day so that I didn't have to worry about getting up at 3:30 in the morning again. And just woken up and taken the 11 a.m. down to Marsh Harbor, and I'm there. I'm there a day late, but sorry, guys. You know, my bad. Now I go home. I wallow. I just sit around all day. I had a me day. You know, I missed a flight, but then I got a little me day. Just sat around. I didn't drink at all, but I just sat on the couch and I probably watched some stupid, mindless, entertaining show and had some dinner and went to sleep at like 9 o'clock. And I'm like, all right, well, now I know the program. I threw that old passport away. I'm ready to go. I set my alarm, you know, fall asleep. And I remember rolling over in bed and I was awake and I roll over and I got a window on the right side of my bed. And it's like, oh, it's light out. I mean, it's not 3:30. So looks like I missed the second flight. Oh. And then that's that. And then I come to find out the trip to Augusta that I took that I came home on Wednesday from, I could have just stayed there Wednesday night. They had a plane leaving from Augusta. There's a couple of his buddies that live there. They had a plane leaving from Augusta Thursday morning.
So I think it's his fault for not telling you about the private flight from Augusta.
Yeah. Well,
see?
He didn't tell me. I just forgot.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I forgot.
But here's the good news, though. No, but no.
Or
no, no,
turn and burns.
Turn and burns. But here's the good news.
Yeah.
You made a par on 16 Sunday at Phoenix. You lifted the shirt. We'll wait to see if there's any fines, but I think it's worth it because now you're out of exile with the whole group text with Cashmere Keith.
Boom. Done. I'm on Keith's good side again. And he still owes me at least $8,000.
At least $8,000. I'd say 16. I like
16, SVP. I do.
And he's got it. He's Cashmere Keith. He's got it.
Yeah, Keith's been playing some real good golf.
Yeah, he's been messing around with it. A real quick story on how I met him. I'm sitting at Augusta, and he came in, and I'd never met him. And I saw him and said, hey, how'd you do? How'd you play, Keith? He said, I shot 72. I said, a little of this, a little of that. He said, I made 7 birdies. And I said, wait. Oh. I said, how the hell did you shoot 72? He made 7 birdies. He said, I shot at every flag. He said, I'm not going to win from where I am anyway. He said, I just fired at every flag. He said, that's not how this golf course works, bro. He goes, now I know. He sat down, and we started talking live music, and he and I have been text buddies ever since.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds like Keith. Yeah.
I got to figure out the sweet spot, though, with texting players that do well, because you always want to be encouraging, but then I always fear if I send the text on, say, a Saturday night, and you're in the mix, and then it goes wrong, then it's like, that guy needs to leave me alone until it's over. Right?
Nah, we don't care. I mean, we're always going to try to do well. I'm not going to – yeah. It's not your fault. I mean, you weren't hitting the shots. So I think we all like to hear like do well and good luck and pulling for you. But like, we also really don't care. We want to win and do well way more than you want us to win and do well, you know, kind of thing.
I like to
so
hear that. It's not my fault.
Send away.
Tell me. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah. Send away. If you're on the fringe, just send it. Just
okay. Lessons learned here for all of us, I think. Don't expect to see any more of Harry's nude body on a golf course. It's happened once. They were chanting his name. Let's chant his name when he finds the winner's circle, which is coming. We know that breakthrough win's coming soon. In the meantime, play good golf. And I appreciate you taking a few minutes to BS with us. It was a blast to watch Phoenix. You all were out there in the arena, man. But I hope it was as much fun other than being stressed out on 16 as it was to watch.
Yeah, it was fun. It is a crazy kind of fun, but it is always fun. And then it's always nice when that week is over one time a year,
little different at the Riv, little different scene at the Riv.
There's like 15 people on the hill this week at Riv, just cheering, gentle claps.
What a golf course though. That is enjoy it. Play well. And I appreciate you taking the time, big fella.
Awesome, guys. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
Our thanks to the Big Rig. He and Joel Damon just took it to the absolute absurd level there with shirts off, the hole in ones, the scene at Scottsdale. And then, by the way, Steve, the tournament, an incredible tournament where Scotty Scheffler, he gets his breakthrough win. It was a packed leaderboard. It was like the perfect event because the golf was great if you like that. The circus was great if you like the scene. The weather was perfect. Everything about it. The sneaky thing about that golf course is it's an excellent golf course for creating drama for just the people that like the golf. And I know there's people out there that are like rolling their eyes and didn't dig it. And yeah, there probably needs to be something where you just like, maybe we don't throw beer cans on the green every third group.
Yeah.
Maybe we ramp it back a skosh. But there's nothing like that event. And this year it was a whole other level. And then the tournament itself was great. But thanks to the Big Rig for stopping in. Thanks again to all the folks that we said off the top from our brief time in Los Angeles. It was a fun week.
No doubt.
And that'll do it for SV Pod. We will see you all next week.